love
it. Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's go ahead and reconvene the Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting. Next up is item 15. This is discussion of possible action. This is a workshop to review and discuss different performance evaluation criteria and methods that may be used for evaluating the annual performance of a county manager. Mr. Osborne.
You bring that coffee because you plan on being here long?
Ouch.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. Mr. Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. If you've read it, this is just a workshop on, you know, what type of direction you would like to provide me essentially, and how do you like to evaluate the county manager. One way could be to be, you know, on one side to be very regimented and structured and check boxes and A, B's and C's and 1-2's and 3's and things like that. And the other opposite would be no form at all, and let the board and discuss amongst themselves how they feel a county manager is doing over that past year period. This is lined up with the existing job description for the county manager. That job description provides that there will be an annual review of that person by the board each year. So I provided some enclosure here. It's pretty simple. This is really not the form. Is what direction would you like to provide for me? A little bit of left or right or in the middle. Enclosure A really shows some dark lettering, 1 through 7. And these are really what generally are the pillars or the criteria main points that you would evaluate or what are often evaluated of a county manager, city manager, CEO, other such folks that are the head of a county, a city, or a private industry. And essentially, if you just look at the dark lettering, you would be assessing, is this person an effective leader? Is this person an effective manager? Is this person an effective planner? Is this person an effective human resources developer? Is this person an effective communicator? And is this person an effective economic developer? And then per the job description, is this person an effective emergency manager, maybe a crisis manager? And below that are subpoints. These are typical, essentially a survey that I came up with these things, typical things that determine. Is this for an effective leader, the person would be a motivator, the person would delegate authority appropriately, be an effective management team, be able to communicate, you'd be a strategy leader, you would develop goals, objectives, and policies, you'd have a good relationship with the board, good relationship with staff, departments, and elected offices, in our case, relationship with residences, business, and public, ownership of air, intergovernmental relations, and follow International County Manager Association Code of Ethics. That's on the following page. I don't believe that I need to read all of these to you, but the point of that is when you develop a criteria for evaluating this person, these are kind of some ideas that might give you something to think about, and then you could provide comments, say, we'd like to also add, or we don't really care for this one, or, you know, whatever it is that you three of you want, and then with that direction, then I can start building a potential platform for an evaluation criteria, trying to focus on the things you want to look at in that person. Of course, we know that this is not the county manager or anything to do with the person. This is any county manager that you'll be evaluating over time. On page 3, I'm not going to read these unless you want me to, but these are the International County Manager Association Code of Ethics. And essentially, there's 12 tenets. These are the pillars of a good county manager, according to the ICMA. And is this person a democratic leader, believe in democracy? Tenet 2 basically deals with being creative and practical. Tenet 3 deals with standards of ethical conduct and integrity, public, professional, and personal relationship. Tenet 4 serves the people and the best interests of the people. Tenet 5 submits policy proposals to elected officials and understands that role. 10 and 6, as elected representative of the people, are entitled to the credit for the establishment of what staff does. 10 and 6, or 10 and 7, deals with professional administration. 8 is the duty to continually improve the members of professional ability and develop competencies. 9 is to keep the community informed. And 10 is, and then it starts going to 10, 11, 12, general responsibilities of doing the job. And that kind of gives, I think, a little bit of a framework to kind of see maybe an area to build an evaluation.
Quick question, Austin. I like to confirm we are working on a county manager's position for our future, and point out that our Pat Whitten, our county manager, has been very involved in helping us address these strategies on where we want to go forward in the future. Having sat in that chair for so many years and being the professional he is, and I like to confirm that we're working toward a new position. I'm going to assume that this position is an appointment that would come out of the city commission at that point in time.
Correct.
And I'm also going to assume that that position is an employee at will. And so I'm making that a tested assumption. The one question I would ask, and I understand developing the criteria and the questions that are going to be asked, but assuming that this position is going to be the leader, if you will, the manager of the county, who is going to do the evaluation? What entity, what person, who are we going to assign that responsibility? And it can't be a subordinate of that position. It has to be somebody that's arm's length and independent, who will go through the criteria and perhaps make the recommendations to the commission, or are you seeing that doing that some other way? But I'm curious on who we're looking at would be actually the person that would interview and do the job evaluation.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. My simple answer would be is the three of you.
Right.
What?
The three of you, the
yes.
commissioners.
And so that would be done in open meeting between
yes.
the three of us?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not sure that'd be the most efficient, but that's my personal opinion.
By statute, you're his boss.
Right.
And it is something that you can't do in closed session. This has been an issue with a lot of different counties over the years, and I think at times they had him in closed session, and there was law that came out of it with the Attorney General's office that it has to be an open session. You are the county manager's boss, and the evaluation is done by the three of you. Correct?
Yes.
So we need to approach this under the consideration that we're going to use the criteria that's being developed, and then we're going to go through that criteria in open meeting with the county manager.
Correct.
Would that be the interview process as well?
You mean the interview of a...
We're going to hire a county manager. We're going to have to go through an interview process, and we're going to do that publicly with all the various candidates, and we're going to interview them prior to hiring, or we're going to have a department that's going to prequal for us prior to, and have we thought about that?
So let me, and I'll look to anybody who wants to discuss that too. I'm going to go back to the evaluation criteria. There's different ways of doing it. Ultimately, it'll be in the public sector or in the public meeting. There are some counties that each commissioner will evaluate the county manager on his or her own, submit that to the human resources director. The human resources director compiles that information, and then that information is brought to the board in public for consideration, identifying what each commissioner feels about the county manager. That would work in a type of model where you have check marks or one, twos, and threes, that sort of thing. You can go to the other side where some jurisdictions don't prefer to do it that way. They prefer just to come to the table and discuss the matters and evaluate right on the spot. You can go either way.
And are you talking about the hiring of a new county manager, or are you talking about just the evaluation?
Either.
May I?
Sure.
I like your point, Commissioner Gilman, and I've actually looked at how, and Austin and I have talked about a lot of this. There's nothing unique or foreign or objectionable to me in the approaches that are being made here. As to who it applies for. Relative to the evaluations, you know, I appreciate your concern of having any subordinate of the county manager be the gatekeeper, if you will. And again, subject to open meeting law, which is probably a little different scenario. I know in the past, at least the Story County School District has had their chairman receive input from the other two and then genericized the specific comments that, you know, there's a tendency to be a good motivator, but, or, you know, however that looks, that may not pass with the open meeting law. The other way you could do it that I think addresses your subordinate concern would be appoint the clerk to the commission to be the gatherer. She currently is not subordinate. She never will be. She's a constitutional elected officer. And I think that might be, well, long story short, I think there are a couple of potential ways that this could be done relative to, you know, the processing of the input. And I certainly agree that it ought to be the three-person board. The relative to the selection, we can take that any way you want. You know, I mean, that's clearly, again, it's always been and always will be the commission's decision. I think I've repeatedly said I can't pick the next county manager. Doesn't mean I couldn't recommend for you if you chose that I do. But I think first off we probably should address that separately, and we have a little more time on that. You know, we can. I'm not going to leave day after tomorrow. But I think we can again place a workshop here. You know, in the next few months after Austin and legal counsel finishes the processes for evaluating, setting financial compensation, that type of stuff, and circle back and say, how would you like it run? Would you like a national search? I think there are so many questions that, you know, we need to be able to ask that I can begin to ask each one of you individually, and then we can workshop it as these are your options. You know, right. You can, you know, sometimes we look at jobs internally. Oftentimes we don't look at jobs purely internally. There may be someone better out there, you know, than is currently internal. So, have I answered your question?
It does.
And just for the record on that, I sat on the board for hiring the city manager in Carson City, and they had there was a group of us that were professionals that worked in town, and there were citizens, and they went over all of the applications and made recommendations to the board. So there's a lot of different ways to do things, and that's just one of them. So I agree with Pat that this is what we're talking about, and in the future we can sit down and figure out where you want to go with it.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. And being a workshop, those are the items that I think we ought to drill down into and maybe consider some options. I understand the criteria being very important. And I think we all pretty well understand that, generally. But I think the mechanics of how we're going to do it is important to me. Yeah. That's my focus. Yeah.
So, Austin, the job evaluation has been in policy for a long time, right? How about this format? Has this been in policy, too? I like this. I like this format of evaluating the job performance and that. Is this in policy as well, or is this just a...
What you have in front of you, this criteria here, this is not in policy.
Okay.
What this is stage 1 of 10, potentially, maybe stage 1 of 5, maybe stage 1 of 3. These are things that I put in front of you to say, if you're comfortable or are you comfortable with these being the criteria, the things you want the county manager to be assessed against. If you are comfortable, meaning the main points and the sub-points, then I would ask you, okay, the next step would be I start putting these into some kind of a format, whether it's a form or a policy or whatever. But I'm going to need direction from the commission on, do you want to become very structured? Do you want to become not so structured? Structured meaning lots of forms, lots of check boxes, lots of procedures, or not so structured meaning the three of you could do most of the work at the meeting, maybe looking at these criteria and discussing amongst yourselves. We believe the county manager is an executive leader because he's doing great with the motivation. Maybe there's some improvement needed with delegating authority, whatever it is you want it to be. Or you can have it, you know, in a form done that way. I don't want to start going off and building policies and forms without knowing what direction you might want to go with that regard.
Well, I'm not sure if I'd be interested in any type of point system or something like that, but I like this as a format or a template using, you know, this is good information to go over, mm-hmm. because I like all the points that are listed on this. And I think if you just had a sit-down interview doing an evaluation, if you're just shooting from the hip, I think you could miss a lot of what you've got lined out here. So I like this.
And what you're looking at comes from evaluation criteria that's going on in the region. Douglas, Lyon, Carson, Washoe, other places as well as ICMA, and that kind of are the things that's consistent with the region.
Okay.
And I appreciate your approach.
As for the interview process, I think we should take that up later on a later date. But I've got thoughts on the interview process as well. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody else want to weigh in on this?
No.
No?
I agree.
Okay.
I think it's a great format.
All right. Well, I guess at this point we can open up for any public comment on this item.
Okay.
You guys can fight for the microphone.
Yeah. Okay, keep going. Okay.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Were you envisioning a 360-degree process?
Can you elaborate? Thank you.
I had the pleasure and quite interesting experience of having to coordinate getting feedback for the president of Intel Corporation at the time, Andy Grove. I did it for 3 years. Which meant that, as a subordinate, obviously we were all subordinate, I had to go collect feedback from his direct reports, the executive staff, the board, which, like you, were his bosses. And he never did this because he just didn't feel like he should, but you also provide a self-appraisal. So 360-degree is you ask the employee to provide you with, they're not giving themselves a rating, you know, whatever your rating scale is. They're simply giving you what their assessment is of what their strengths are, what their areas for improvement are, and what their accomplishments are. They provide input. 360 means you're also getting it from peers, and you're also getting it from subordinates and those above them. So you get a complete 360-degree view of performance. When you collect it in that way, you're going to find differences, because the view that a manager, the person above the employee, has of the employee is a different type of a relationship than that of a subordinate. You need to get all of that feedback in order to really see what the performance is from a balance standpoint.
All right, don't touch me, Nathan. Do you have a cold?
I do.
Thank you. To answer that question, so in this, what Nicole's saying is right. I'm asking the board what you want. I'm not proposing anything to say I recommend this. What I have in front of you, obviously, there's a board evaluation component, and there is a self-evaluation component. I personally don't think that any evaluation should happen without a self-evaluation component. Whether you would like subordinate evaluations, public evaluations, other stakeholder evaluations, I'm leaving that up to the board to provide direction. Thank you.
And I'm suggesting, based on years of doing this and based on best practices, that you may want to consider a 360-degree approach.
Thank you.
Okay. Just don't touch anything. Yep. Okay. Don't spit on anybody.
On the shot clock.
No, I'm just practicing.
It's okay, I'll be brief. Sam Toll, Gold Hill.
in listening to Mr. Osborne describe the different processes, you know, do you want to encumber someone with forms and reporting? Do you want to give someone, you know, the reins and let them run? When I trained my managers, I basically asked them for the tools they needed to get their job done and then got out of the way and let them do their job. In dealing with, you know, public service, it's a little bit different because, you know, we're responsible for other things, and as an autocratic top-down ruler, I could basically watch and see fit. I think that based upon what I've read and Mr. Osborne's description of the job description and the evaluation process specifically, I agree with Mr. Gilman. I think that in choosing someone, there should be perhaps more transparency, as Ms. Langer described in Carson City. But I think that in respect to how the board and the county manager interact and what sort of discourse is done, whether it's on a daily, weekly, monthly, or smoke signal basis, is important because as the recent controversy over the golden parachutes handed out to three retiring employees and then the subsequent disclosure of past bonus awards, those were done without knowledge or without discourse with the board, and I think that illustrates the kind of thing that we need to be careful of and that we need to be mindful of when we look at evaluation, when we look at communication, and when we look at the discourse that happens between the overseers and the person who, you know, legitimately needs to be able to do his job and do it the way he sees fit. You know, we hire a competent person, we trust them that they're going to do the right job, and then we get out of the way and let them do it, but there needs to be some oversight and some, you know, course correction potentially. So I would suggest that those things be considered as well in this evaluation process. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? So we're not scheduled to take any action on this item.
No, it's a workshop.
Workshop only. Yeah.
Well, I like where we're going, so go ahead and continue this on. Either another workshop or an action item here in the future.
My recommendation would be the next one that they start putting together some kind of a policy form.
Okay.
If I'm kind of hearing from you, that you don't really go extreme left or extreme right. You want to kind of be in the middle ground as far as the complexity of that. I'll build a draft like that. You know, probably the early part won't really be a draft. It'll be an outline. And then you all can look at that outline and say, yeah, it's going the right direction. And then from that outline, I'll start building a draft, and then you can look at the draft.
Okay. And going forward, either there might not be adequate time to get it on in 2 weeks, but maybe the following one after that. So
I'll be working on that.
Okay, I mean, I don't think this is time sensitive.
It is if you want to evaluate a person. Say that.
Well, it's already in policy that that the county manager should be evaluated, and so we could do that even if we don't.
Okay.
If we don't have anything else structured by them, we can still do it. But
I'll make a note of that. Thank you.
I just know that your calendar is pretty full, so it's
the next meeting is also a tentative budget that's going to consume a chunk
right.
of time.
Right. So
absolutely. Not a problem.
You can look out how your time works into it, how the agenda looks as well. So
well, it appears the timekeeper made a little error, Mr. Toll, it was not meant to be on when you were talking. I was just playing with my clock. It had no reflection on how long you got to talk.
Okay, you're not going to penalize you any time in the future then? Yeah. if you go over 4 minutes here, you only get two next time.
That was the timekeeper's error.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. We don't need a motion to go ahead and continue this on, do we?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's just a workshop.
Nope.
Very good.
No, Mr. Commissioner, I should be saying no. No.
Moving along now to item number 16. It's a discussion of possible action. Approval of administrative policies that give the county manager either significant job duties or the responsibility of making sure the policies are approved by the board and are followed by staff. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Robert Morris. We're following up on a part of the discussion of the county manager job description. We talked about how there were some policies that needed some work, and this is opportunity to look at. I have six policies included in the packet. Actually, four of them I think are pretty ready to go, and I'll briefly talk about those. There's a revised policy one that talks about the policy way of or the way of creating policies and the function and the procedure manual that we're going to have that's actually in existence but that we're working on. The first two policies looked familiar to me, and so I looked at Douglas County's, and it was surprisingly similar to the text that Story County had. And I was looking at it, and I thought that we could make some changes to make it more readable and understandable. And so I've made those changes. I talked to Austin. I think he doesn't have any concern about changing anything in there. It's pretty straightforward. I thought there were better ways to describe what a policy is, so I put in a different definition of what a policy is. And number two, there is a little bit that might be worth talking about is how the policy is required to be, or the manual is, and how the policies are created and reviewed. And so I put in a process that makes it a little more explicit about how to do that. And I think it complies with what we're doing today, the way of showing the changes, talking about the reasons for the changes. And so on these first two, they're just general policies about how to do policies and how to do the manual. Again, I don't think there's anything really earth-shaking. It's just, I hope, an improvement in the language to make it more understandable. There's the next one that I would talk about is revised policy 08008, and that's a gender request for the Board of County Commissioner meetings. I was going to do it previously, but Pat had an interest in being here for the approval of this. After talking with Pat and the clerk, I think they're satisfied with the text that's in here, and that's one that I think is ready to go and should be adopted by the board today. If there are any questions about it, I'd be happy to talk. The fourth one is revised policy 042, contracts and agreements. And that's the one that we discussed briefly, and I do have new text in there that I think is worth looking at. And so what it is the number is 042, and it's the draft that shows the changes. And I can briefly describe those. There was a concern about how contracts should be done. And the basic framework is that all agreements have to be approved by the board. And what follows is certain exceptions to that general rule. There's also a rule that, or a policy that all contracts must be reviewed by the district attorney, county manager, and the comptroller before consideration of the board. And that's just the process of, is the contract legal? I think you've heard from Mr. Loomis about contracts, and it's that kind of review where there's something in the contract that's not legally sufficient for the county. And so that's why we have all contracts must be reviewed by these entities, the county manager, district attorney, and the comptroller, before consideration of the board. Now, there's a new text, subsection D, and it says contracts with appropriations approved. And that's the differentiation that I've tried to use in this policy, is if a contract or if an idea has been approved by the board as part of the budget, it doesn't really seem to have to come back to the board for any approval. So when a contract, say if there's a budgeted item for computers and the contract for the computers comes back, the board doesn't have to actually have to look at that one because they've approved it in concept by doing the appropriation. And under those circumstances, after the review by the proper entities, the county manager can go ahead and sign that contract. There's a new section E as well in that, and it's basically it allows, if I can read this really quickly, excuse me.
Want me to read it for you?
Yeah.
Mine's in green, it's easy to read.
I just did a black and white copy, so it's not quite as good. And so E was contracts for emergencies that don't have a chance for the board to approve them. This sets a process that they may be approved and signed by the county manager after review of the district attorney and comptroller. So this would be an emergency that requires some immediate action, and the board would be unable to meet even in an emergency meeting. And that gives the county manager the authority to go ahead. And it says that a contract approved using this procedure must be put on the board's next agenda for review. So that would allow it to come back. There's the text in F still contains the $5,000. Commissioner Gilman and I talked about the potential of using a different figure, and we decided that I think after discussion that $5,000 was adequate for what's going on. And again, it might be that practice after this is approved dictates a higher number, and it would be up to the board if you wanted to change that to a higher number. But at this point, I've continued with the $5,000.
When, Bob, when you continue on in that sentence, in a change orders and construction projects, if the change order is no greater than 10% of the total amount bid. Now, if the total amount bid is $1 million and you got $100,000 override,
mm-hmm.
I think we've just we're lacking something there if we're only given the authority for $5,000 to sign a contract where we have a $100,000 override because it's 10%. Or is it going to be $5,000 or 10%, whichever is lesser, something like that? Or?
I could do something like that. Again, the change orders is a little different because there's already been a contract that's been approved by the board.
But maybe only for a certain quoted amount.
Right. And so
a significant increase.
What I'm suggesting is the board can say when you approve the contract that change orders over $5,000 need to come back to the board, but anything less can be done by the county manager. So I think in your approval of the contract, you can set limits as you want. I could change the language to include $5,000, but I think since change orders is a slightly different creature than just a flat contract, it might be easier for the county manager to have the authority to go forward with it.
You know, I'm looking at Sherry as I say this. You know, I caution you on change orders because change orders is a very nebulous terminology. We have change orders on the Ames contract to our favor and to our disfavor. We have change orders that may change how we've allocated contingency. You know, there are so many of those integral. I caution you don't put an arbitrarily low number. Typically, again, I would probably suggest that your change order shouldn't exceed the amount of the approved contract, you know, to be honest with you. You know, we just contracted with USDA for $2.106 million, and trust me, there will be change orders in there for our betterment that may save us money, may cost us money, may come out of contingency. I may turn to Hugh, you know, as I am doing right now with roads, and piggybacking on being able to pave roads that we're doing. So those are all change orders.
And so if the board feels comfortable with the idea that when a contract comes in with change orders, you can put limits on that. You could say any change order more than $50,000, come back and talk to us, or any change order that's to our benefit, you don't have to bring back, or and so I can see if you would like that included in the policy, I could do something like that. But again, I'm thinking that.
I don't even know if it needs to be in policy. I'm just asking the question.
Right.
We have $5,000, you know, on a low end, but then we have the 10% could be
a huge amount.
It's an infinite number there.
Right, I agree.
So with, let's say, with a contract that big, is there any contingencies in the contract that, well, if we hit something that's going to cost more, we'll keep it under this limit?
Very definitely. If you went back to the item that, you know, the sheriff presented to U.S.,
right.
You know, if the $2.106 or whatever it was, $1 million, was all construction, and it wasn't. It was construction engineering, and there was a chunk in airport contingencies at the same time that would be triggered by a change order.
But is there any kind of a ceiling on those change orders? Are they held to a certain amount, or is it kind of...
Realistically, right now, the ceiling on the change order are the commitments from the funders, in this case USDA, or in the case of roads, the ability of the comptroller's office to procure other monies as he has done on the paving projects. So.
I have
another question.
Oh, go ahead.
When's the last time you had to make a decision on a contract for $5,000 or less?
You know, I'm more heartened, I hope, by the approach, if I understand it right, that, you know, if you guys have allocated for it in the budget, I can sign it.
Right.
You know, as long as the DA and the comptroller review it.
Right.
There aren't very many 5,000 or less contracts.
Yeah.
So really what this policy is doing is it's saying, take, you know, I mean, Hugh and I probably have this conversation three times a week. Can you sign this? And it's like, hell, I don't know what I can or can't sign anymore. And he's advocating to have it signed. I think our engagement letter or whatever it was, not a contract theoretically, but whatever it was. Which one was that? Sherman Howard? Park? You know, so, I mean, those are allocated within a budget. And we'll be recovering our costs anyway. Was that Sherman Howard? Okay. But I would tell you, I mean, this doesn't hand strap us. Because that provision, it says if it's in the budget, you know, upon review, then it can be executed. And I mean, most of these things, we'd want you to know about anyway, in one way, shape, or form.
And I was going to say that's one thing that we did add to this policy, saying nothing in this policy prohibits the county manager from having a board review, vote on, and sign contracts and change orders. If the county manager feels that it's important enough for the board, it can always come back to the board. And then it says, additionally, this policy does not prohibit the board from requesting certain agreements, contracts, and change orders be approved by the board or reviewed, even if it's already been signed by the county manager. And that's to give the board clear authority to look at contracts.
So I would like to see the, as Marshall pointed out, you have this signing construction, you know, change order on projects greater than, value, what is it? There's no greater than 10% of the total amount of the bid. I think that needs to be separated from the $5,000 contract thing.
That should be worded separately.
Because you're creating confusion with that $5,000 limit there.
So, reading the sentence, it's agreements and contracts that have not been approved by the board and are valued less than $5,000. Can be signed by him without going to the board, and a different category, sign change orders on construction projects if the change order is no greater than 10% of the total.
Maybe we just need a period in a new sentence.
Okay.
I think Commissioner McGuffey's saying separate the two because the $5,000 doesn't apply to a change order.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
And please point out anything that you think is a concern and needs change.
No, that's right. I just want to chime in here that what these changes are to these policies, as you can see, 042 was in existence prior to coming before you today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the new language on what we thought we heard in the workshop last time we were here to make sure that we put down in writing what we think you are saying. And if we're getting that wrong, please correct us, because this is all about what you'd like to see.
I think it would be more clear if it was separated from the $5,000.
Right. And I understand that, and we'll
yes.
do that. And so on that one, I think we should bring that one back. But if there's any other comments, I'd be happy to entertain it.
I only have one more question. It'd be on 001.
Okay.
Under item Roman numeral 2, the last sentence, the county manager's office is responsible for providing a digital version of the current version of the manual to be available on the county's website. Is that currently on there, or is that something we would have to do going forward?
I think it's already on there.
I do want to be clear, though, that there are elected offices in particular, and the fire district, I believe, where you know, we don't control those policies. I know
right.
the sheriff's office has, it's not LexisNexis, but anyway, the sheriff's office has a set of adopted policies mm-hmm. that the sheriff under his statutory authority adopted.
Okay.
I don't put those on there.
And I had a little bit of concern because Mr. Osborne has worked a lot on the human resources policies, and there's a whole list of those. The financial policies that most of these come out of, and they are all on the website, as so far as I've seen. And so it's not a new obligation. I was a little bit concerned whether it should be HR or the county manager's office, but I believe the county manager's office has been doing it up until recently. And,
they're one and the same, so they're fine.
So yeah. It's not any change. It's just to make sure it's clear that policies once adopted will get put onto the website.
Yeah, well, I think if we're simply going to change the punctuation for, on 042, do you have to bring it back? Or can you, can this be approved today?
If you're satisfied that I can make the change, it would be very simple. I think what the county manager suggested is putting in a period. I just want to make sure that the language is proper.
Suitable for what you want. So,
if I may propose then an F, starting with the second sentence, it would read, the county manager is authorized to approve and sign on behalf of the board agreements and contracts that have not been approved by the board and are valued less than $5,000, period. Then, new sentence, he, she may also sign change orders on construction projects if the change order is no greater than 10% of the total amount bid on for the project. And I might add, bid on and approved, Bob. It needs to be not only bid on, but bid on and approved by the board.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Wes, do you have any concerns?
Yeah.
On these policies?
Yeah. When you're, have you guys there on this one? Mm-hmm. I'd like to drill down a little bit into 008. Item A says that this has to do with placing items on an agenda. And I've always understood in our community that a county commissioner may put something on the agenda that they believe is important to the community. This says that the county manager is responsible for the agenda of the board meeting and the approval of the agenda items. And then C says that any member of the public, the board, or county may request an item. But those can be denied, as I read this. And D says that all ordinances and resolutions must be reviewed and approved and signed off by the district attorney's office before being placed on the agenda. I believe those items usurp the powers of the board to place things on the agenda to be reviewed. And I'd like to see us drill down into that.
I understand your issue. And I think what I tried to do is make it clear under C that the board can request an agenda item. Now, if it's has to be approved by the county manager to get on to the agenda, I would suspect that he would generally be looking forward to getting it on to the agenda. Just because it's a board member. I think even though it includes county staff and the public, I think those people would as well be able to get stuff onto the agenda. And so I don't see any restriction of that. The only thing that happens is sort of from a managerial standpoint, there are some things that are not appropriate to go onto the agenda. And we don't want people just saying, well, you have to put it on. I think there's a requirement that somebody be a gatekeeper, and under these circumstances, it's easiest to have the county manager do that. And if he denies something, he basically has to respond in writing saying, this is a reason we're not going to put it on. So I think there's some protection there. For both sides, one is not to have frivolous items on the board's agenda, but then on the other side, especially like the ordinances, this was Vanessa's language that I probably adopted for the ordinances and resolutions. She wanted more control over how they were presented, the numbering of them, and so that's why there's some constriction on specifically ordinances and resolutions, but not other parts of the agenda.
Well, again, Bob, I feel that this board has elected powers for the
yes.
county and responsibility for operating for the county. And I think having a non-elected official deciding what should be heard that a board member has submitted is inappropriate. And I think it usurps the power of the board, and I think it goes to the bottom line with it, all respect aside, the board are the final decision makers, in my opinion, for the county. And to deny them something that they want to see on an agenda item is not appropriate, and I'll stand on that.
Okay. Would you suggest that the board be treated differently than the rest?
Absolutely.
And that the county manager just would automatically have to put it on?
If an elected county board member asks for something to be put on an agenda item to be heard by the public, I think it should be put on the agenda.
If I may, yeah. And I can't guarantee this, but I'm pretty sure that's our existing policy right now.
It is.
Any one commissioner can ask.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. We could easily revert back to that.
Okay.
I don't disagree with Commissioner Gilman. There may be points in time where a request might be legally questionable of some type.
You can discuss that.
In which case, then we discuss, and I discuss with counsel.
Right.
I can't envision ever saying no. I think you hit the nail on the head, especially when we're talking about annual performance evaluations.
Right.
But we could revert back to the existing language.
Okay. I'll be glad to look at that. If the rest of the board concurs with that, I'll be happy to look at it.
I actually missed that part because it's always been my understanding that any board member can have an item placed on the agenda.
Right.
That's current policy.
No questions asked.
And I thought I had included that sort of broad authority, saying that it would go on unless the county manager gave you a written reason why it was not going on. And so, but I understand the difference. And
good call, Lance. Any other concerns? Any other policy?
No, I'm good. Otherwise, I appreciated what you did on the contract side. And with those changes, I'd be fine.
Okay.
Hey,
Jack?
I'm fine with this. As far as I know, it's either one of the three could have to put something on the agenda. I've never had any backlash. It just gets done. So it hasn't been an issue.
I like having it in policy, though, because Pat's not always going to be here,
yeah,
and neither are we.
Yes.
So I think it's a legitimate policy.
Okay.
There's two policies that we haven't discussed, and I was going to say that Mr. Gallagher gave me some suggestions on the voluntary early retirement, where he was interested in participating in the calculation, basically the plan, the economic plan that shows that there's sufficient money that is going to be saved by the early retirement. And so there are a couple of places in there. It appears, since I'm going to come back with some of the policies. I could come back with this, but just looking at the voluntary retirement program, section 5B, it says the department head will prepare and submit to the director a written budget reduction plan, including any reorganization, changes in pay, grades, job descriptions, and authorized positions. And so what I would suggest that we could do is say that the department head, in conjunction with the comptroller, will prepare and submit to the director, and that has the comptroller as being an active participant, and that way we'd be sure that the numbers are right. So I would be, there's probably a couple of other places within that policy that it might be good to add the comptroller specifically. And number 7, at the end of it, 7C, it says the director will accept and process requests, determine eligibility, and again consult with adding the comptroller and PERS to calculate years of service, so that we would have the comptroller participating in the economic portion of whether this plan works or not.
Okay. Who are you referring to as the director?
That would be the director of HR.
Okay. Yeah, I think that should just be stated as so.
Okay. And the final policy that I have is the separation agreement. Now, just to be candid, I've been somewhat uncomfortable with it, and I feel that I haven't done a very good job of setting it up. And so I haven't gotten any comments. I've tried to circulate this one, and it's I have it as 00X, and it's separation agreements. And it was my preliminary attempt to get comments from the board. And so I would just ask that I have the opportunity to work on it some more. But I'm open to any suggestions. This one, I really would appreciate comments from the board. To help.
And the reason that we've made a delineation between the voluntary retirement programs and a separation agreement is because they're based on different concepts that came up during the workshop. So we don't even know necessarily that you're interested in separation agreements. We just put that in there based on the fact that it is something completely different than the voluntary retirement program. As you can see, they each are addressing different scenarios. So I guess one of the questions that we have right off the bat is the separation agreement even anything that you're interested in? Correct?
Yes.
So in the going back to OXI, the voluntary retirement program, where is it? Program conditions, actually services, 30,000. And then you have the bonus it's limited to a separation agreement for 30,000 that it occurs. I thought there was something in here I saw that it had to be, the department has to recover the purchase of the service expense.
Right, and that's for the early voluntary retirement.
Right.
The idea is that you replace an employee that's has a higher salary with one that's less.
Right.
That, so there would actually be a budgetary reason for doing it that would cover the cost of the retirement or the separation.
Sure. Is this a necessary policy, separation agreements? Is it something that is necessary to address at the county level?
No, not really. It's the thing that I would say about policies is if you want to do something similar to the separation agreement, you should probably put it in the form of a policy. You don't have to adopt this policy at this point, and it's really up to your discretion as to how you want to do it.
I'm generally uncomfortable with setting this policy and putting this into place as a procedure. I don't know that it's necessary for us. If there were an unusual circumstance that could come to us, it could be brought to us anyway, without setting a precedent, if you will, that we're to follow. That could be utilized in a number of different ways. So, just food for thought. I'm not sure that we need to add another layer of regulation here in this regard.
I completely agree with you, Commissioner Gilman.
And I agree with you also, because I pointed out in past meetings is that I think this poses an expectation by someone thinking that they're going to go ahead and get early separation.
I agree.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's what I was leading to.
Okay.
And so then what we're hearing today is this is not something that you're interested in, the separation agreement. It was something that came up that was a different concept than the voluntary retirement program. So that is why we've presented it. But at the same time, what we're hearing today is that that is not something that the board is interested in, along with staff, and so that we would not be – well, I guess you can just – when we get down to the motion on this, as you saw in your agenda packet, you can agree with the ones you want and – scrap the ones you don't.
If in the event, if there was an extraordinary circumstance which would pose to be a voluntary separation or something like that, the information that was posed in there that would be placed in there to go ahead and calculate what the savings would be by replacing them with somebody else, that's been done in the past. It's a simple formula to do. You just calculate what their grade is, their step is, and longevity, and what it's going to cost to replace them with somebody else. It's about a 5-minute process, isn't it? Huh?
Yes.
So, and I agree. I agree with Commissioner Gilman. I think this is just putting one more layer of bureaucracy in place. Right.
Are you just for clarification? Are your comments specific only to separation agreements, or are you proposing both that and establishing a voluntary retirement program should be excluded?
No, I was okay with the voluntary retirement program myself.
Okay.
There are two different concepts and two different policies. They have two different numbers on them.
We're talking about people retiring.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
The other one doesn't.
All right.
I'd like to ask our HR director, and again, I mean, regardless, you guys are the only ones that can approve it. So I would suggest, in my experiences, having gone through this, that establishing a maximum purchase of $30,000 probably is questionable. I mean, a year of PERS, I would suggest, since you approve it, either raising that or eliminating the cap. And I would also tell you, I think this is being over generous in establishing a 24-month recapture period when the historic perspective or target bogey has been 12 months.
If you're wise, I'll answer. The $30,000 could be problematic if you have a group of people that retire over time or all at once. I don't know, they could be discriminatory if you have one person that has been with the county for 30 years and that PERS buyout would end up being $34,000 or $36,000 that would preempt that person from being able to do a voluntary retirement program, while those folks that have been with the county for 12, 15, 20 years, where their PERS buyouts might be $19,000 or $20,000, will go ahead and scoot on by and retire. I agree with Pat. This board is going to consider each and every one of them. Not having a limit in there would allow you to know exactly what you're getting into for each budget cycle, and it wouldn't have to account for inflation and all types of other matters. That's my response to the one question, and I do have one other item in here when you're ready. I'd like to discuss that as well.
And so what did you feel about it?
Are we in agreement we need a cap here? This needs a cap number? Pat, are you in agreement with that?
I'd like to not see a cap because I think the scenario Austin laid out is going to trap some people that you may want to consider. Keeping in mind, you know, we focused on replacing them with a lower salary. In some cases, we haven't replaced. You know, so that's another key. But I would say since this board has to publicly approve every action under this program, why put a cap on there? It may make sense where 34,000 makes sense or 52,000, because again, and I can go back, we're not going to rehash this like Groundhog Day, but I go back to Dean Haymore being replaced with Gary Haynes. You know, again, that went from almost 200,000, 186,000 strong at least, down to 136. So I'd encourage you not to have cap, because you guys are going to be the ones that make the decision anyway.
But you would like to have the 1 year instead of 2 years.
Right.
That's always been my benchmark, of 1 year recapture, not two. And again, maybe we can blur that line a little bit. I mean, on the three that you guys reviewed and in essence sanctioned me, the two of them were under a year and one of them was 2 weeks or 3 weeks over a year. So maybe we want to set a target of a year, no more than a year, but maybe not make a policy if that's possible, Bob, if the commission agrees. I mean, you guys are going to make the decisions anyway, not me. That message is locked in stone.
So on programming conditions, item C, you got 3 years in there?
I thought it was two.
It says three, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's way too
long. Yeah, that's a long time.
I think,
generally in a contract, it's a good policy and perception to set a top baseline. In this scenario, I'm not sure that works for the benefit, because when you set a cap, aren't the folks you're talking to going to be looking for the maximum cap? Does it degrade your negotiating ability to have a cap?
I can answer that from the PERS perspective. What happens when an employee wants to retire? And what has always happened, they'll go to PERS, Nevada PERS will print out, and they'll come up with a formula and come up with what the payment is for that person to go ahead and leave today as opposed to leaving in 1 year. And the number is given to us. It's usually between 20 and 40,000, somewhere in there, depending on how long the employee's been with the organization. That's the number. And so we'll get that thing. You owe by March 23rd, 2018, $28,263, whatever that number is, and that's what sets that amount.
But I also see where you're going, Commissioner Gilman, and maybe the cap shouldn't be a dollar, but a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If you set a cap of a maximum buyout of 1 year to be considered, regardless of what the dollar amount is, I think you provided for a more reasonable factor in the program.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to be buying 2 and 3 years. You know, there's no.
Yeah.
I understand. I don't know if you want to buy anything, but you guys get to approve it or decline it.
But we're always talking about PERS here. In this scenario, when we're talking about a voluntary retirement program, we're talking about a PERS number. we're not talking about some other arbitration.
Well, that's a very good point. They might want to consider at least taking it back to the drawing board. We're going to get some people right up at the edge of the PERS cap. We're buying them a year of PERS means little to nothing. If you go back to the three, there was an amount calculated under the manner in which Austin said, you go to PERS, you do the calculation, here's your number. But the PERS contribution wasn't to the employee's best interest. So a year of deferred comp, the county's deferred comp with Boyd.
Which is an alternate number.
Same number applied to a different retirement vehicle, if you will. And as the way it's written here, Bob, it's PERS, right?
Right. And we discussed it at one point and decided to take deferred comp out. But
okay.
It has the ability to go back in.
Yeah, you might be able to get a much better rate of return out of a deferred compensation package account than you would by putting it in PERS.
Mm-hmm. But thereby, do we want a cap? Just a kind of a...
One year of what the PERS would count.
Would be the cap.
Would be what I'd recommend a cap being, no matter where it gets funded, no matter what the dollar amount is subject to approval. So you get the magic document that Austin's referring to. You go to PERS. If I wanted to buy 1 year of PERS, what would it be? Boom.
Believe it's always identifiable. Always identifiable.
Yeah, now we've got a dollar amount.
Number.
That dollar amount can go into PERS, or that dollar amount could go into some other deferred comp subject to board approval.
Mr. Osborne, I wanted to say something.
I have another question, but I want to make sure we've exhausted this.
It was a deferred comp.
Discussion first.
We're all just exhausted with this conversation. Go ahead, Austin.
Okay. Now, this is more of a structural matter. There's a paragraph and a paragraph for here. It says an employee's participation in the program requires a person filling that vacated person must start at a lower step or salary than that of the employee participating in the program that left. Structurally, I'd like to work with Bob on setting it up, because what can happen, I'll try to think of a scenario. In a perfect world, you get a retiree that's near, or a person near retiree, they retire, they get a PERS buyout, they move on, and then you hire a person off the streets that starts in at a step one, is cheaper. Sometimes it doesn't happen. You might have an administrative assistant that has been with the county for a very long time, they do a PERS buyout, and then you may want to transfer another person from another department. That person may be as or more expensive than the original one that left. This policy would preclude that from happening, even though there would be a budgetary savings because that person in that other office is no longer in that seat. That seat gets filled. So I just think there's some structural language in here to try to provide those different flexibilities.
Good point.
I agree. I think this should go back to the drawing board to be taking some of these.
No, I'm really happy to hear all these comments. It makes my job much easier to be able to figure out exactly what text to put in. So I'm very happy with the results today.
So, Bob, is it going to be your recommendation that we approve some of these policies today and then bring the other stuff back to the drawing board?
Correct.
Or can you make the corrections to these four policies that we're prepared to go by making putting one line in there where the county commissioner board member can add anything he wants to an agenda?
Yes.
And the other one where you simply have to put in a period to change the text to say
Mm-hmm. That's correct. So I would ask that the board adopt policy 1, policy 2, policy 8 with a suggested change, and policy 42 with the suggested change. And I think you could combine those fours into one motion, and then you could continue policy XX and we'll just have the other one go away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Might be time to open up for public comment. Public comment on this item. You've exhausted the audience as well.
Okay. Would you please restate the ones you want to approve here?
If you would approve policy 001, 002, 008 with the change of having commissioners placing items on the board's agenda unrestricted. And then approve policy 042 with the change of adding a period to separate the 5,000 and the
change orders.
10% change orders.
You know, the only thing I'm going to say, and you're all tired now, to be put on the agenda, it has to be legal. That's not an assumption. So it's got to be, you can't put an illegal request on the agenda. So I don't know, and not that anybody has, but if one day somebody decided that they wanted something on the agenda that legally couldn't go on for whatever reason, I can't think of one right now.
Just look down the road where this board isn't here and this manager isn't there, and a commissioner wants to put something on the agenda, and the manager just doesn't do it.
We're not saying that. No.
We're saying there could potentially be a request that is contrary to either county ordinance, state law, or federal law.
Right.
You know, in areas of, you know, employee rights or contractual bargaining or, yeah, I think we're both being kind of caught off guard here, but I think the request would have to be legally conforming is what Ann and I have been discussing a little
bit. Pursuant to law. That's all.
And that does come up, that you're presented items that are clearly illegal to put onto the agenda.
Yeah, I mean, Keith's my new best friend. I probably talk to him more about out-of-word stuff.
Right.
Is this conforming than, you know, anything else?
And we're not saying that you're going to do that, but just to make it clear to everybody down the road that it has to conform to, you know, state, federal, or local ordinances.
So any item can be placed on the agenda by city and county commissioner as long as it conforms to
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see, were you going to do some more editing on the 0X1 voluntary retirement program?
Yes, I would like that one continued so that I could work on it. I would suggest that there's one or two other policies that are probably worth looking at in combination with the review of the county manager's job that I might bring back next time with the voluntary retirement program.
Okay.
Not to make it any more difficult, Marshall, but I'm curious about it as I sit here thinking about 008, and we're going to indicate that it has to be legal in order to be placed on the agenda, correct? So let's use an example of the marijuana program. Not that I have an agenda item that way, but it's not legal under federal law. But it's legal under state law. And so your nuance has to be under what laws is it legal or not legal. Because in the case of the marijuana, it's illegal federally, it's legal in the state of Nevada. So you may have to differentiate about what legal criteria you're going to use in that circumstance.
It just seems that that's going to present the potential problem that somebody would put something on the agenda and the district attorney would have to get up and say, no, this is contrary to open meeting law and you can't hear it. So it seems like you're setting it up so that instead of a discussion before it gets on the agenda, it's going to be on the agenda and then there's going to be a discussion whether it could go forward or not.
You know, we've got an existing policy, and I don't disagree that, you know, I can't think of any instances right now where I've ever had a commissioner request something that isn't legal. I mean, this goes way beyond this commission. And trust me, previous commissions may have been more inclined to do it than this one, based on lack of legal counsel. But I would probably tell you the policy works, you know, as is language, without the restrictions, you know. And then, you know, the scenario you paint where the district attorney or legal counsel gets up, or prior to that even, upon review of the agenda, contacts the requesting commissioner and says, you got problems with this, this, and this. You know, I mean, if I see something taking us into the treacherous waters of employee rights, employment, you know, that type of thing, you know, trust me, I'm going to talk to any of the three of you, and I think any county manager, you know, or HR director. So I would suggest we just trust the system for what it's worth and keep the existing policy language in there as well.
Okay. And I can do that. And I'll make sure that if you go ahead and approve it today, I'll make sure that you all get a copy so you're sure that it says what you wanted. Otherwise, you could continue 008 for next time, and we can deal with it then.
I just want to make sure that everybody's happy with the language that's in there, so I would recommend that you continue that one just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Okay. And these are taking quite a while. I'd recommend the second meeting in April, not the first meeting, because
that's,
of that.
That's fine.
So 01, 02, and 042?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And continue 008 and 0X1, and we'll eliminate 00X.
Yeah. All right. I'll open it up one more time if there's any public comment or call for a motion. Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve these and continue the others and delete the other.
Yeah. I'll move to approve the adoption of the following policies, that being 001, 002, 042, with adding a period separating the $5,000 and 10% change orders. Okay. And then
you could do a separate motion to continue the other ones.
Okay. So those are the three that I'm recommending to
approve.
To approve.
Okay. We have a motion to approve 01, 02, 042.
Second.
Moved in second to approve these three. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Continue on with your motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion to continue policy 0X1 and 008.
Second your motion.
Move the second to continue 0X1 and 008. All those in favor?
And what date would you like to continue to?
Oh,
April the 20th.
Should be the 17th, I think. It'll be the 17th.
Yeah, okay. Continue to April 17th.
Okay, so the motion will include to continue it to the April 17th date, 2018, in this courtroom at 10 a.m.
Very good.
Second your motion.
Move to second to continue those two items until April the 17th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries unanimously.
And then the last motion will be to eliminate policy number 00X.
Okay. A motion to eliminate 00X. Second.
I'll second.
Move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. We're going to move along now to item number 17. This is discussion of possible action, review, and possible approval of auditor recommendations to Story County audit report for the period ended June 30th, 2017. Mr. Gallagher.
This is the last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Each and every year we have an audit. There are auditor's recommendations of nothing what we did good, but always something that we need to work on. This is no different. As you know, DePietro and Thornton, this is their first time on the block. I thought that they did a wonderful job of this thing. And through the report process, we had three special revenue funds and two enterprise funds where expenditures exceeded appropriations. Now, there's four areas in which this happens. It's salaries, benefits, services and supplies, and capital outlay. And you may throw general government in there, but that's a catch-all. If any one of these items or these sections is over, then it's a violation, and it has to be noted on the auditor's report. And this is exactly a lot of the stuff, what this stuff is. In addition, the auditor has recommendations that he makes about the overall conduct of with regard to internal control, and also it's relative to how we did with prior year's recommendations. So with that, I'll go over these recommendations that they made for us. I'll give you an explanation of what happened and our corrective action forthcoming. The first one is the Virginia City Special Tourism Revenue Fund. Exceeded appropriations by a little over $11,000, but exceeded appropriations by $52,000. A letter from their director, Denny Dotson, is there for your review. And in addition, I'm going to visit the Virginia City Tourism Commission at their next board meeting and say, you know, we've always established a line, which was the March 31st. Now, if you're over on March 31st, then you're not supposed to spend any money. Tourism Commission is a little different because they've got to go forward. We have no idea, for example, how an event's going to do, but we have budgeted that. Danny and his staff has gotten a lot better at that. But I have a feeling we'll probably still see this next year if that happens, because we're not going to cut business to Story County to satisfy the requirement that of over-appropriation. The other side is the augmentation side. And we augmented the budget three times last year, which it was a very, very difficult process. We're going to probably do one this year, probably do it later, and make sure that all the department heads at least know that when we say that you're over or your sector's over, then that's it. I mean, go steal paper clips, pencils, and paper from somebody else, but from that on, you can't do that. One of the things that happened last year is that we gave an okay for a department head who's no longer here, so I don't have to look at scowl at him. But we gave him the okay to appropriate about $34,000 or $40,000 for the purchase of a piece of equipment. We did that in January. Went through the budget process, got to March and April and said, okay, we're fine. We're all going to augment some of this out. No. Thinking that he essentially bought that piece of equipment in January, and essentially he bought it with 2 weeks left in the fiscal year. Put us over. So those kinds of things happen. We try and monitor as best we can. We meet with all the department heads, and hopefully this year I think some of the stuff will come back and we'll be better at it. But with the V&T Commission, I mean, it's that special revenue fund, you know, we can always encourage them to look at it. And Denny and I talk about it at least on a monthly basis. And at the next board meeting, I will mention this again to say, okay, this is where we are. Do whatever your budgeting is, and let's see what happens. I don't mind them if they're producing a ton of revenue to be over on appropriations, quite frankly. It's an explanation to the Department of Taxation that we're dealing with this thing, but we probably should have augmented some money last year. Mutual aid. Mutual aid is a fund that the 474 Fire District uses for all fires that are initiated outside the 474 Fire District, which is Story County. What we do is we try and balance the revenues and expenses to that, because that is all funds either from California or federal funds that are coming in. And those funds sometimes are late in coming. In this case, their revenues exceeded appropriations by $108,000. However, their expenses exceeded appropriations by $109,000. So $1,000 off here. So what we're going to do this year is we're going to budget a little bit more for that. So hopefully that will take care of it. We have no idea about the future of fires from during the 2018 season. So we'll do a much better job of doing that. Emergency mitigation. I mean, this was a 2017 flood. So consequently, not only was this over-appropriated, but it's now in an ending fund balance. And now between now and the end of the year, we will refund that fund through a transfer from the general account. The Water System Enterprise Fund had excess expenditures over appropriations of $120,000, of which a lot of it was due to GASB 63. Now, the same thing happened with the Virginia Divide and Sewer Fund. GASB 63 says for those enterprise funds, those future payments to PERS or OPEB have to be put in enterprise funds, and there's nothing you can do about it. These are exempted items. These should not have been items as far as a mark against what we do, because they are exempt under the Department of Taxation. But I wanted to put these in there and say, okay, what happens is that we get this actuarial for 10 years, we take their payroll and benefits, and you blow it right out of the water. Well, Department of Taxation says, well, now we understand that any future payments of that stuff, you're kind of exempted from that. So in both of these cases, there was an exemption there that should have cleared us, and it really does clear us. In addition, I think that we did book enough depreciation because in regards to the sewer plant, brand new, came on board. We didn't have really a clue as to how much of that was going to happen. We underestimated on the depreciation, and that was pretty much that. The district court fund is excess appropriations of $2,080. This was due to a professional contract for district court services that we had, and when we were looking at things between the tentative and the final, I inadvertently knocked some of this stuff down, and I again have to apologize to our clerk treasurer for that. But we now have an understanding of what's going to be paid next year. This shouldn't happen. The next section is report findings by the auditor itself. The first report finding is on report preparation. And the comment was that the county has always asked the outside auditor to give assistance with the audit report because of staff constraints. The auditor has explained the circumstances is not unusual in an organization of this size due to time constraints of management and the costs associated with compliance of the standards. Unfortunately, in this case, this is the first audit of DePietro and Thornton. Understand that Pringle CPA decided not to do the audit, which was way late in May. DePietro and Thornton didn't start till June or July, and so consequently, we weren't aware of what they needed and what they didn't need. We were basing it on what Pringle and Pollard had, understanding that we have 32 special revenue funds, and within one fund, we have about 32 departments. So we've got pretty much over 5,000, 6,000 accounts that we have to reconcile. Can't be done with staff, too. We've always done this. We've done this forever. We could gather four or five or six people and get this thing done and accumulated in a manner that Washoe County does. But the Department of Taxation understands this. They says, you know, we're not going to put a lot of, you know, have to spend a lot of money to do these things. We'll let those people come in and assist you. It doesn't do anything as far as degrade the purpose of the report or the classification of the report, but they felt that they needed to put this in here. I agree, and so that's what we're going to explain to the Department of Taxation. The second thing in their report was cash and investment accounts. Investment accounts were past recorded on a cash basis and for an annual report adjusted to the fair market value. Their request is that any internal documents that we have, which is our quarterly reports or whatever, if they're presented to the board, should be at market value. I don't have a problem with that. Our existing problem that the clerk treasurer had at that point in time was really couldn't find out what the market value was through our Wells Fargo account, but has since we have a couple of other investment things that we feel very comfortable about, and we will do that starting with the third quarter. Report preparation. The Story County, this was about things on retiree funds and whatever. The Story County Board of Commissioners will adopt policy standards that will require approval of any future additional retirement payments benefits by the board, and that's exactly what we're doing now. So that will be my report to the Department of Taxation. As far as the status of prior year's findings, there was only one that they said we didn't do, and this is we've been going through this for the last 5, 8, 10 years. It has to do with federal and state funds. A state fund that Sherry may gather or somebody else may gather may end up being a federal fund at some point in time. We really don't have an idea about this. They've always wanted us to have two separate funds, one separate special revenue fund for federal grants and one for state grants. I don't know. I'm probably going to have to talk to Sherry again about this, see where we want to go with it, but we're going to try and it's identifying those people that it could be 9 months into a state fund, turns into a federal fund, and then all of a sudden we get a little knock for this. So it's always going to be here, I think, until we find some sort of solution within the federal state funding pro forma. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that is my report on the auditor's report for last year.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Commissioners, have any questions for you? Yes. Legal, have any questions? Staff, have any questions?
I do.
Okay. Public comment regarding Hugh's presentation? Okay. If I get a motion to approve the auditor recommendations.
I hereby make a motion to approve the recommended actions pertaining to the auditor's recommendations for the audit report period ended June 30th, 2017.
Second.
We move in a second to approve the auditor's recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 18, selection of an auditor for Story County for the year ending June 30, 2018. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that DePietro and Thornton did a very good job of doing the audit for this county. They were kind of thrown into the lurch, but I'll tell you what, they did, I thought, a terrific job. And as I called and asked, there was a pause at the end of the phone as to whether or not they would like to do it again, but thank God Joe was just joking, so that's good. So I would like to recommend them again. I think they did a wonderful job. I thought Joe did a a great job. Joe Costanza did a good job of explaining to not only the commissioners but the audience about what the financial reporting was for the year into 2017. And I'd like to give them another shot for 2018.
Okay. And they've shown an interest in returning,
yeah,
even after last year. Huh? Okay. I'm personally satisfied with them. I think they're timely, and we know they found some stuff that had been missing in previous audits, and so
whatever could go wrong did go wrong. I mean, trying to balance the beginning balances was quite an item for them, and it took me by surprise. But at least we've got that solved, and so we're on steady ground now.
Well, I think we're on the right track. Because each year, the budget process in the county gets a little bit tighter. You know, everything seems to is falling better into place than where it should be. Every account is being charged what it's supposed to be. So that's good. Good auditors. Do you guys have any concerns about going back after? Do you catch on, Thornton?
These guys had to do a lot, some history and catch up at the same time.
They got here way late.
They had to do a little extra work on this.
Yeah, they got here way late, and we were cruising, and then it came to fixed assets, and they had a little issue with trying to balance the beginning balances, and there was very little documentation from our prior auditor on that. So,
good. Very good. Is there any public comment regarding the selection of an auditor? Fiscal budget? Okay. Staff's recommendation?
We engage with DePietro and Thornton. I agree with everything you said. They did a great job under difficult circumstances, and we should have a much better platform going into the current year.
Terrific. Okay. Then if we can get a motion to approve that.
Per NRS 354.624, Story County Commissioners do hereby select DePietro and Thornton, CPA, LTD as the auditor for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2018.
Second.
All right. We moved to second to select DePietro and Thornton, Story County Auditor, year ended June 30th, 2018. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you.
Moving along now to item number 19, discussion and possible action. First reading of ordinance number 18-283, an ordinance amending Story County Code, Title 17, zoning, including Chapter 17.28C, commercial zone to restrict adult uses with a special use permit, and Chapter 17.10, definitions to amend definitions and add definitions for adult uses, including adult retail, adult bookstore, adult motion picture theater uses, and other properly related matters. In addition to provisions of the NRS, any person may complete and return to the board or planning commission a statement supporting or opposing the proposed amendments to the county code and zoning ordinance. Additional information may be obtained from the planning department, storycounty.org. Mr. Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne for the record. I don't know that I need to explain this. We have talked about it. The Planning Commission has talked about it. They did provide unanimous approval of this for recommendation to the board at the last meeting. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Board members have any questions?
Not a question, but, maybe it is a question. Pose a question. A couple of background items. Back a few years ago when we opened on C Street, the restaurant, we were going to display some items there. And we found that the items that we were talking about displaying and doing because they were of an adult orientation were prohibited because of the historic district. That you could not, per the historic district regulations, do any of that in on C Street and anywhere within the historic district rules. So I don't know how this lines up with the historic district. And perhaps you've researched that one way or the other, but that's the question that I would have on amending the regulations.
I can provide an answer if you like.
Go right ahead. Yeah.
So this pertains to the C-zone. The C-zone would allow up to 20% under this with a special use permit to display adult merchandise, and it would be in a back room kind of a thing. The commercial residential zone doesn't apply to this, so it does prohibit it. I'm not aware of the Comstock Historic District Commission requirements with adult uses. I've never heard of anything that would regulate uses inside buildings with that regard. Maybe they would have some signage or outside use requirements. But as it stands, the commercial residential zone that does apply to C Street, Virginia City, does prohibit adult uses. What's being presented here doesn't affect either. All it does is make a clarification to the definitions regarding adult uses. We found some obvious issues with a resident coming to bring them to attention, and it was apparently an issue. And then this does change the 5% to 20% inside a building, because 20% is just more of a reasonable number. 5% isn't in the commercial only zone. If we were to make consideration for those sorts of uses in the commercial residential zone, one, I'd be happy to look into Comstock Historic District Commission requirements, and number two, it would require a change of the commercial residential zone to allow that, and perhaps allow it under very certain circumstances, like what you're describing, that use have been there for quite some time.
Yeah, I can't address beyond that, except we were denied on our license the right to sell those items because they weren't allowed in the historic district. That's all.
Okay.
I don't have any questions. Jeff, any questions? That's it. Public comment? Hearing none? Just a second here. Can you read the title of the ordinance?
Sure. This is ordinance number 18283. It is an ordinance amending Story County Code Title 17 zoning, including Chapter 1728C, commercial zone, to restrict quote-unquote adult uses with a special use permit, and Chapter 1710 definitions to amend definitions and add definitions for adult uses, including quote-unquote adult retail, quote-unquote adult bookstore, and quote-unquote adult motion picture theater uses, and other properly related matters.
Thank you. Right. Jack, if I get a motion to approve this ordinance?
Yeah. In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission, I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, motion to approve first reading of ordinance number 18-283, an ordinance amending Story County Code Title 17 zoning, including Chapter 17.28C, commercial zone, to restrict, quote-unquote, adult uses with a special use permit, and Chapter 17.10 definitions to amend definitions and add definitions for adult uses, including, quote, adult retail, quote, adult bookstore, and, quote, adult motion picture theater uses and other properly related matters.
Second.
We moved in second to approve ordinance 18-283. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Talk fast. You got to get some.
Yeah.
Moving on now to item number 20. This is discussion of possible action. The first reading of ordinance 18-284, amending provisions of the transient lodging tax provisions of Story County Code Chapter 3.60 to provide for a maximum stay to which the tax applies. To clarify, the disposition of the revenues of the tax, providing a route for review of the transient lodging tax, audit, and other matters properly relating thereto. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is an ordinance that originally the genesis behind it was the fact that there were some hotels going into the Tri-Center that looked like potentially they were going to be extended stay hotels. And the concern was whether or not there'd be a loss of transient lodging tax revenue if that were the case. After looking into it, Really, the Tri-Center is subject to a different set of zoning requirements than is the rest of the county. The Tri-Center is I-2 zoning, which under the I-2 zone is allowed to have up to 10% commercial zoning. And that provides for the uses such as hotels and motels. The resolution of similar uses has definitions of the hotels and motels and describes them as being transient lodging type facilities. And so really it's almost already covered by the existing language of the zoning that applies to the Tri-Center. What I did do in this was increase the length of the stay from less than 28 days to less than 30 days. That change is based upon the fact that the Real Property Landlord and Tenant Act says that exempted from the landlord-tenant laws are hotels and motels where the stay is for less than 30 days. Once you're there for more than 30 days, it becomes a landlord-tenant type of occupation, which is a residential use, and it's not allowed in the I-2 zone in any event. So the hotels and motels that are going to go into the Tri-Center are going to be subject to that requirement. Now, and I think that they are probably going to have people that are going to stay there for longer than 30 days, but they may have to cause them to re-register, change their room number. But it's going to be up to the hotels and motels to figure out how they're going to address that. I was asked by Austin, well, how's the county going to enforce this? And I think the process for enforcing is through the audit process that is authorized by the Transient Lodging Tax Ordinance to determine whether the appropriate amount of transient lodging tax is being paid. Outside of the Tri-Center, we did have a provision in the zoning code that authorized an extended stay hotel, which was described in the definition as a transient use of property, which would have authorized somebody to stay for up to 180 days. That provision of the zoning ordinance has since been removed and is no longer in existence. So that is no longer an authorized transient use of a hotel outside of the Tri-Center zoning area. So, and again, the change in the zone in the transient lodging tax ordinance has moved it from less than 28 days to less than 30 days just to comply, be consistent with the Real Property Landlord Tenant Act. The other thing I've done in here is identified the source of authority for the transient lodging taxes. There are two different sources of authority under the Chapter 244 of the Nevada Revised Statutes. We have 244.355 and 244.3554. And so 1 cent goes under 244.355 and the other 9 cents comes under the 244.3554. And this just identifies the sources of those authority and provides for what's to be done with the revenue from those taxes in accordance with state statute. The only thing that was not in the existing transient lodging tax ordinance is a provision required by the Nevada Administrative Code that says there has to be a right of review by which a hotel, motel owner, or someone required to pay the transient lodging tax can challenge the audit recommendations or the audit findings, and they can take it either to the county manager, or if they disagree with the county manager, they can take it to district court or justice court, depending upon the amount that's in controversy. This does not raise any taxes. It does not change any taxes. It just maintains the existing level of transient lodging taxes and is here for a first reading.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Oh, go right ahead.
In an abundance of caution, I'm going to abstain from discussions or voting on this issue, inasmuch as TRI still has properties and so we're involved in future sales. And so I'm going to abstain from voting or discussion on this.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. What department has the authority to audit?
It's the VCTC.
The VCTC, it does. Okay. Jack?
No.
You're good?
I have a couple of questions just about it.
Jump right in.
Because I've read this and I'm not real clear. On extended stays in TRI, will we be able to collect transit lodging tax, period?
Yes. Extended stays are not authorized in TRI under the resolution of similar uses. So okay. what will have to happen is that the hotels and motels will have to avoid getting into a landlord-tenant situation with their guests, and they will have to re-register them after 29 days have passed, perhaps make them change rooms, and that would start a new guest-hotel relationship.
Okay. And then does that same situation apply outside of TRI?
Yes.
Okay. My request would be, and I say this to the board, having formerly owned the RV park, which is subject to transient lodging tax, it's one thing to change a hotel room, and if we didn't have to, I think I'd advocate not to. It's something completely else to hook up a motorhome or a travel trailer or something that's practically been camped out there for 6-7 months. So I'd ask for some accommodation in providing that they don't exactly have to move out, but we still don't forego our transient lodging tax.
It's really going to be up to the owner of the property that's subject to the transient lodging tax as to how they're going to want to comply with this.
Okay.
Their downside is if they don't do it right, they may be in a landlord-tenant relationship with their guest, which will then provide a great deal more rights to the tenant than would apply to a guest.
Okay, thank you.
And along these lines, too, is I know that some of the motels in town would go ahead and in the off-season go ahead and rent out rooms long-term. So it would be up to the VCTC to audit to make sure that they're still collecting the transit lodging tax for those long-term guests that are staying in the motels as well.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. I don't have any more questions. I'll open it up to any public comment.
Good afternoon, Sam Soul, Gold Hill. The Mustang Ranch brothel is by county ordinance required to pay the VCTC for this for room tax. However, in conversations with our controller, it's the understanding that the term of stay has to be a day or longer, and since the transactions that occur at the Mustang Ranch are in less than that, they are not obligated to pay transient room tax. However, inspecting the voter registration law roll in Mustang Ranch and the addresses of Wild Horse and of Wild Horse Canyon, there are 7 people who claim the Mustang Ranch as their residence, 3 of which live in the double wide trailer behind the Mustang. 4, however, just list the 1102 and 1101 Wild Horse Canyon Drive as their residence, or 1000 and 1011 Wild Horse Canyon. Therefore, I'm assuming that these people have some sort of a contract or relationship with the landlord that allows them to stay. And the assumption is that they're claiming that as their personal property, or I'm sorry, personal residence, then they, in effect, house there perhaps year-round. So my question is, does this ordinance affect the Mustang Ranch and these 4 residents, excluding the 3 people who live at 5 and 56 Wild Horse Canyon Drive?
The proposed ordinance does not really change anything other than to say that the people are subject to the tax instead of limited to 28 days and now limited to less than 30 days. It's not going to affect landlord-tenant relationships.
However, based upon your description of the zoning ordinance, those relationships are actually not not possible under the zoning of the Mustang Ranch. There's no residential opportunities at the Mustang Ranch, and therefore any contractual agreement, as I believe I heard, as I understood you to say, would not exist, and therefore the only other relationship would be that of a rental. A room rental. Am I correct in assuming that?
Well, I am not familiar with the specific circumstances of people staying at the Mustang Ranch, but what the ordinance does is it addresses stays less than 30 days subject to transient lodging tax, over 30 days is a landlord-tenant relationship, not subject to transient lodging tax. And I think you're getting out into areas that are beyond the what the ordinance is designed to address. You're getting into zoning.
Correct, yes. Perhaps, although that was the nature of my question. The issue is it zoned appropriately for these people to live there, which is out of the purview of what we're talking about today? Or are these people, in fact, renting rooms that would be subject to the room tax because you can't actually rent out there because it's not a residential, it's not zoned to be a residential arrangement?
It's an issue beyond the scope of what we're addressing today. It's the transient lodging tax ordinance says less than 30 days, transient lodging tax is owed. Longer than 30 days, it's a landlord-tenant relationship to which the lodging tax does not apply.
Okay, so since Mr. Gilman has recused himself from comment on this, he's not able to chime in and describe the nature of the relationship of these four individuals. But I think that would clear matters up, or at least
well, plus the fact that that's not an agendized item today either. We're simply talking about an ordinance with transient lodging tax.
Okay, so
not a specific business. Okay.
So what's the appropriate resolution to this question?
We look legal. I don't know what the appropriate is. I know that this is not appropriate to go ahead and challenge it right here.
So I'll bring it up with Mr. Loomis and Ms. Langer. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you. Any other public comment regarding this ordinance? All right. If we can go ahead and get a motion.
If I could read the title in.
Oh, yeah. Would you please? Yeah.
An ordinance, this is ordinance number 18-284, an ordinance amending chapter 3.60 of the Story County Code to further define transient lodging, to provide for the disposition of revenues received from taxes on transient lodging, and providing for other matters properly relating thereto.
Thank you, Mr. Loomis. At this point, I'm going to ask Commissioner McGuffey to go ahead and make a motion.
Commissioner Jack McGuffey moved to approve the first reading of Ordinance 18-284.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second to approve the first reading of Ordinance 18-284. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
And I'll see you later.
All right. Moving on now to item number 21, discussion and possible action. Interlocal agreement providing the terms and conditions for the use of Piper's Opera House by the Story County School District and the display of historic personal property within Piper's belonging to the school district. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This matter was before you at the last meeting for possible approval. At that time, an issue came up regarding what are the items of personal property within the Piper's Opera House that are retained by the Story County School District. So we continue the item to today. The school district has now provided a list of the inventory of items that they are asserting are belong by the Story County School District, and they make no claim on any of the other personal property within Piper's Opera House. That was approved by the Board of Trustees of the school district on March 7th. And is back to you today for possible approval.
Right. I believe it was just a couple of items.
Yeah, it looks like three total.
Yeah, three totals. That's great. Okay. Any public comment regarding this item? Okay, yeah. This was an issue that Ms. Bard brought to our attention. And if you want to speak on it, go ahead.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident.
Marshall, that they're talking about this, and Pat, they're talking about the sideboard. That's been there since forever. And so they're saying that the school, it was given to the school, and the school put it in Piper's, came from the Sharon house. I mean, I don't want to argue. It just looks, sounds strange to me.
I know, you know, that showcase in the back here was, used to be in the Bucket of Blood Saloon. There's a couple in the Fireman's Museum. That, so the thing is, were they donated or were they placed there on loan? Well,
okay.
So the Zalek's could have had this thing put in Piper's Opera House simply on loan. I don't know.
Okay, so we don't really know who owns it. We're just going to do it.
Because John and Lydia are gone now.
Okay. So
everything has to go by the history, you know, the passed down verbal history without having a document saying that this is what it is.
I mean, okay. This is what it is. What I think makes sense and the right thing to do is that it just stays with Piper's in perpetuity. But
And I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen because the school district isn't going to have any place to put it.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any additional public comment regarding Piper's Opera House in the school district? Hearing none? Mr. Gilman, can
just
I get
a comment on that. It says these items may remain on the premises of Piper's Opera House for so long as Story County retains ownership of the Opera House or until demand for return of the loan property is made by the owner of the property of the school district. So it's going to stay there.
It's going to stay there.
Yep. I'll make a motion to approve the interlocal agreement for Story County School District and authorize the chairman to sign.
Thank you. I'll second your motion. Move to second to approve the interlocal agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Item number 22, discussion and possible action, approval of interlocal agreement between the Nevada Department of Public Safety and the State Fire Marshal's Division, Story County Fire Protection District, and Story County. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Martin Esvito for the record. Yes, we're asking for approval for the interlocal agreement with the State Fire Marshal's Office, with Story County Community Development Department and Story County Fire Department. Fire District.
Is this a renewal or is this something new?
We haven't had an interlocal agreement with the State Fire Marshal's Office for about 10 years, decade.
Is that right?
Well, yeah. I think the important third leg of this now is Jeff requesting and the county agreeing that community development will perform some of those functions. So this actually is intentionally a three-way agreement with the state delegating authority that would typically go to the fire district, and then the fire district saying through you guys at the board, we're good with having Story County through its community development department perform these functions.
Okay.
That's correct, as Mr. Whitten stated. And this was also a new fire marshal coming on board, trying to clean up some of the agreements that have existed and just carried over year to year with no changes. So, and this one has had some significant changes with the transfer of fire prevention to community development. So.
And the comment about the fire marshal coming on board is the state fire marshal.
Correct. Yeah, this is okay.
Not the county.
Right.
You find that a lot when you have a new department head.
Yeah.
Dust off the bottle. Do you have any questions, Mr.
No questions.
Any public comment regarding this in a local agreement? Hearing none, I'm going to get a motion to approve this.
I'll move to approve the interlocal agreement between Nevada Department of Public Safety and the State Fire Marshal Division.
And I'll second your motion. It moved in second to approve this interlocal agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Item number 23 is to go ahead and recess as the Story County Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Fire Protection District Board.
Mr. Marshal.
And at that, before we go on to 24, let's take about a 5 to 10 minute recess, okay? We've been sitting here for quite a while. Thank you.